Have you heard the adage, keep calm and carry on? Oh, yeah. So it was originally created in Britain during wartime. It was a wartime or a peaceful slogan during wartime that was never officially released. So in some remote little bookstore in a corner of England, someone unearthed it around the year 2000. And it just became widely disseminated. You know, the right message at the right time, right? We call that divine order. So I invite you to turn to somebody and say, keep calm and carry on. Keep calm and carry on. Maybe this would be our new greeting for everyone, right? Wherever we go. You know, it's challenging for people to keep calm and animals to keep calm if we don't feel safe, right? At times we don't feel safe, we're not in charge, or don't feel confident about somebody who will handle the situation, who's in charge of the situation officially. So there's all of that going on, isn't there? And it reminded me of when Brenly and I met, she had a dog named Chaos. And really, when we lived in Missouri, Chaos was, he had a lot of energy, but he wasn't so chaotic. But when we moved to California, his behavior changed and became kind of erratic and unpredictable. I'm not going to blame California on that. But maybe the move, you know, just new territory, right? And a sense of, I'm supposed to be in charge here, even though he really wasn't the alpha dog. So it was a lot of confusion. When the doorbell would ring, Chaos would charge sometimes. Other times he would just chill in his bed like he didn't even hear anything. Other times somebody would pull up in the drive. But this charging was especially concerning because not only did it scare people because he just ran really fast at them barking, but also, at the end of that, on two occasions, when a service guy came to our house, he bit them. Yeah, right. So that's always a big problem, right? Luckily, in both cases, they were fine, and they didn't want to make a big deal out of it. But I told everybody in my household, I was like, you know, the power of words, guys. Let's change his name. Look, Calmus. And he would come. Nobody was buying it. They liked Chaos. So that wasn't going to work. So Bradley and I were just trying to figure out what is going on here. And we wondered, maybe it's the move, maybe, you know, but we were unconscious of what we were doing or not doing that was causing the issue. So we hired a dog trainer for the first time. And you know what happens when you bring in a dog trainer, right? Well, the people behave, right? Because the training is for the people. We call it dog training, but it's really people training. And so she said, you guys have given him the front door, both of our dogs. You've given him the front door. And we're like, oh, right, we have, haven't we? And so we just needed to take charge of be the first to greet the people, have him and train him to wait. And he was so calm after that. It was amazing, this simple thing. But, you know, that is kind of how it works, isn't it? That he was... suddenly willing, like our egos maybe are sometimes, to calm down for a moment and let the divine master take charge, right? But, you know, it's true within our beings, isn't it? This ego part of ourselves is our personality, identity, our the outward-facing being in the world, and we get the roles confused, and we think somehow we're supposed to be in charge. And we try to assert our control when we don't feel safe, and it just doesn't turn out very well, does it? But if instead we would take up our rightful role, our rightful responsibility, which is to be in service to the divine that is meant to be in charge of our beings, and then we can, calm down a little bit, relax a little bit, learn to wait on our impulses for a moment, for a beat, a couple of seconds. We know, we've learned, many of us have learned this with anger, right? Anger arises, and if only we just breathe for a few minutes, we won't be reactive in ways that we regret and we have to clean up afterwards. Instead, if we just ride the wave of that, you know, calmly, and let the peace, the truth, arise in us and take charge. Doesn't mean we don't have other things to still work out. Doesn't mean that chaos didn't still have contributions to make to the safety and protection of our home, or that he wasn't able to still express himself. Of course, he just didn't have to be in charge. And that was really relaxing, because he's not supposed to be in charge. And the same thing is true for us in our own house. The ego is not supposed to be in charge. And, you know, we put it there over and over again, right? So we need to help the little S self keep calm and carry on, keep calm and carry on. And allow then the carrying on to be according to how the divine guides us, allows us to have our place, but not try to take over. So this whole process requires a tremendous shift for us to begin to allow the divine in us to take charge and the ego to take a back seat. And that that approach, by doing that, then allows the light, the truth, the peace, all that stuff, spaciousness, to be the first to greet whatever it is that has come into our lives, whatever it is that is out there in the world. If we let that be the first greeting, the first place that we go in our hearts, in our minds, in our responses, we'll be more responsive and less reactive, for one thing, and we'll be calmer. And we will carry on in ways that have sustained ways of meeting our needs, which is really what we're after, generally, when our ego is a little bit out of balance. So this is a really good season for this. The season of Lent is a time to release what stands in the way. It's a time to let go. It's a time to give over. It's a time to go within. And Charles Fillmore wrote a book called Keep a True Lent. And in it, he talks about a way that we can help ourselves make the shift. He talks about the Trinity of Mind. Have you heard this before in metaphysics? The Trinity of Mind is the superconscious mind, the conscious mind, and the subconscious mind, and the roles that each of them have and how we want to work with them. The superconscious, you might understand just intuitively as divine mind or divine intelligence, wisdom. Conscious mind is right there in the title. It's what we're aware of, right? Our conscious mind is what we interact with a lot in the world. It's how we are aware of what we are aware of in the content of this moment, both sensory, what we are hearing, what we are seeing, what we are smelling. It's how we're feeling. It's how we're thinking. It's being conscious of those things. That's the conscious mind. And then the subconscious mind is I'm going to use Charles Fillmore's words to describe this. He says, the subconscious mind may be called the sensitive plate of the mind. Its true office is to receive impressions from the superconsciousness and then to reproduce them upon the canvas of the conscious mind. Humans, however, having lost the consciousness of the indwelling God as an ever-present reality, have reversed that process and impressed the subconscious with the conscious mind. So let's say this a different way, because it's always like Charles Fillmore's like meaty stuff. I often have to read it again and like really take it in, right? So what he's saying is how we were meant to operate from being these spiritual beings coming into this physical world, how we were meant to work with these phases of mind is that we let the super consciousness, the divine mind, the divine intelligence of the universe, the wisdom from deep within us, we allow that to be the thing that impresses upon the subconscious, or you could say the unconscious. So making impressions there about core beliefs that we hold, about truths, so that when we are acting in the world, it's coming through that place. There's a knowing, a storehouse of knowing in us that knows truth, that has been made firm in this place. And so we are responding out of that space. But he says, that's not the way we've done it, because we lost sight of this idea of this indwelling divine. And so instead, what we've done is we let the world come through the conscious mind, and we interpret all the stuff that's going on in the world through this just sensory understanding or limited intellect, and then we impress the subconscious with that. So what we end up with is kind of like a cluttered basement of stuff that we don't need and that isn't serving us. It's making a mess of our lives. It makes a mess of our relationships. It makes a mess of our world. So what do we do when we find a bunch of clutter that isn't serving us? Ideally, we clear it out, right? So all that stuff, those core beliefs, those patterns, those impulses, those things that are down in the basement, get cleared by meditations, one of the key ways, right? One of the key clearinghouses. So, and as a result of reversing that process, then we're freeing ourselves. So clearing the space is the first step, right? Is one of the ways we do this. And it's more than meditation. Could be meditation. I think meditation's a really good one. But there also could be, you know, journaling. Journal out all your stuff and just spill it on the page. That's a way to clear things out. Movement is a great way to let go of things that are stored in your body and let things kind of come back into balance. So, you know, you have your own ways of clearing that you know work for you, that help you come to peace. So it's doing that. And then we need to be aware that there are going to be impressions made, and we can make deliberate impressions through things that are of truth, like spiritual material, things we read, podcasts we listen to, things that inspire us, things that remind us of who we are, things that impress in that basement, if you will, or that crawl space of the mind, truth. So that is what then we are acting from. That's what we're speaking from. That's what we're knowing when we see something out in the world that we say is chaos. We suddenly have a different kind of response from that, which is a kind of calm. Keep calm and carry on kind of attitude. So the calm comes when we clear the space, and the carrying on comes from these impressions of truth that we have gathered up in the subconscious mind now, replacing the old clutter that wasn't serving us with these truths. So Charles Fillmore again says in Keep a True Lent that this process is a big deal. He says the conscious mind must be faithful during this transformation. It needs to be a deliberate thing that we're doing. It must look ever to the super consciousness for all direction and all instruction. You know, it's like when we were retraining chaos and retraining ourselves. It wasn't a one-time deal. It was multiple deals. It involved multiple treats. It involved multiple times of sitting when the doorbell rang and then being released when it was time to be released, right? And it's the same for us. We need to give ourselves a break and recognize that we might need to repeat this and to be vigilant. He says it can of itself do nothing with assurance because the spirit of wisdom rests in the superconsciousness. Again, that's not outside of ourselves. It's part of the wisdom. It's the wisdom that is within us, available to us, accessible to us. It is the allness everywhere present, right? But we make it accessible through our minds, through our hearts, through our bodies. So over time, we learn then to trust that this actually works better to go to the superconsciousness or the divine first, and to do this, to reverse this process. But it's understandable how things went awry, you know, because we came in as these magnificent, huge which is the truth of who you are, spiritual lights and love and like walking peace. You know, we are, and before coming into physicality, we were only that spirit. And so as spiritual beings coming then into this physical experience, as children, we have to focus on the conscious mind. We have to learn how to develop a healthy ego. So that becomes the focus as we're growing up our children, right? How to be in a physical body, how to be in the world, how to interact with people, how to get along. All that stuff is a part of developing a healthy ego. So we need that. It's never about casting the ego out. It's about reworking the job description. And as children, we had a different job description than we do now. And that's the whole problem, is some of us haven't switched our job description, right? We're still focused on developing the ego. It's like, no, it's already developed. It's great. You're good there. Develop the other. Do the other go-to, right? And so if you can imagine then, you know, for children on top of that, many of us as children, maybe not all, we had this sort of maybe not a quite a full understanding of this God thing. Because, you know, for a child's literal mind, if you say there's just this permeating essence even, or you say, you know, God is up in the sky somewhere, punishing and rewarding at will, it's a little hard to access that. If God isn't taught or the divine isn't taught as something accessible to us, and as one early New Thought writer wrote, I was taught to practice the absence of God rather than the presence of God. So you've got this developing ego, learning about the conscious mind, and then that superconscious thing. I don't really understand what that thing is, and it doesn't seem like very available to me as a kid, perhaps. But now we're grown. Now we know differently. Now we need that new job description. So I imagine, you know, if you think about work, you know, your work life, over time jobs change, right? New technologies come in, new staff are hired, things change. They have to change with the times. And so if you're still stuck in that same job description that you received 30 years ago, chances are things are not working very smoothly. And the same is true for us, right? We have to recognize that our concept of the divine, our concept of the world changes as we grow and mature. And a lot of times we're still using the old blueprint. And so it's time to recognize what is different now. What is my ego's job now? Let's take a look at the new possible job description. Nice. Follow the leadership of my divine essence. Let the divine lead the way in what I think and what I say and how I respond, what I do, how I'm being in the world. And regularly clear my mind in meditation or whatever other means you might use. Contemplate the divinely ordered patterns of the universe. That is a beautiful thing. Have you ever looked deeply like into the patterns of a flower or the patterns in the starry sky and just recognize that there is a bigger pattern that is always playing out? And when we do that, we also recognize that order always comes out of chaos. That beneath chaos, I mean, it's scientifically proven, we've talked about chaos theory before, that there is this energy that is always reorganizing itself in the presence of chaos. So the conscious mind may see chaos, but the super consciousness is like, oh no, I'm just reorganizing things. It's going to be better, trust me. And so that's sort of the process, right? And then lastly, consume spiritual food. This one is really important, and I want to break this one down a little bit further. So when we consume spiritual food, we're making impressions in our the depths of our minds that I am divine in truth, that the people I'm interacting with, those I'm seeing, are divine as well, that I live and breathe and have my being in a magnificent world. And so when we start to then let that in, and how do we let that in? Well, what are we feeding our minds? We have to look at what kind of food we're, it's just like the body, right? And just like the body, our diet changes over time because our body changes over time. Our likes, our desires, our preferences, our healthy needs, or, you know, our splurges, they change, right? And so to recognize that the same thing is true for the mind. So what do you feed your mind, and is it nourishing you in every way? And is it nourishing you spiritually? So one of the things that I have found very nourishing is Gaia TV. Anybody watch Gaia TV? There's actually a spiritual television station. It's fabulous. It's got all kinds. It's got Joe Dispenza on it. It's got Heart Math on it. It's got things that will blow your mind on it. That's what I find. I'm always expanding the possibilities when I watch this, these different episodes and interviews. I leave watching these feeling uplifted, feeling a sense of kinship, that there are people, lots of people in the world who are working to raise consciousness on the planet alongside of us. So watching that versus watching something filled with violence and doom and gloom, just like, wow, what's the difference here? You know, why would we in our free time add more angst, more violence, more separation to our minds and bodies and hearts? But we do it, don't we? Because that's what's available. So we just, but there's, and there's other things available. There's other ways available for us. On the other hand, I've been reading this novel, and I like to finish what I start. So it's hard for me to abandon a novel midway through. But it's dystopian, and I just can't hang with it. You know, it's about famine and smog, a projected future of all this stuff. And, so, and I don't believe it, because I believe humanity is waking up, not going under. And I find when I'm reading it, I'm anxious about what's on the next page or what's in the next chapter, what other shoe is going to fall, what's going to happen here. There's kind of a ray of hope in it, but it's just not quite enough to grab onto. So I finally just said, no. Set it aside. There's something better to feed my mind with, you know? So how about you? What are you taking in? What are you consuming? What are you choosing to consume? And what you watch and what you read and what you converse about, where is your mind hanging out? And what are you giving it? Give it pure food. Give it just inspiring food. Try it. You know, everything's always an experiment. If you're like, oh, no, 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 I got my soaps, I got my series, I got my, you know, I'm not changing that. Okay, well, then don't change that. But try to, like, add some other stuff in and see. And then just notice after you watch the thing you're used to watching that maybe stirs you up a little bit, and then you watch the other thing, notice how you feel afterwards. Notice what happens afterwards. Are you feeding your mind in a way that you are getting nourished? Because I know for me, I want food that's going to free my imagination and it's going to energize my spiritual journey. And so if we can kind of, for you, you might have a different intention, but create your intention and then ask yourself, is this going to free my imagination? Is this going to energize my spiritual journey? Or maybe I just want a mindless, maybe I'm consciously choosing a mindless moment to watch whatever, you know? That's fine too, you know, just be aware. Be conscious of this process because it's always at work. And that we're not taking the conscious stuff and impressing upon the subconscious anymore. We're taking from that higher realm, that deeper realm, and shifting things in the basement so that we can live and move and have our being, that we can keep calm and carry on when whatever comes our way, because we're centered in it. So keeping calm and carrying on is kind of like the cliff notes to the Serenity Prayer. You remember the Serenity Prayer? It's really solid prayer for our times. Most of us just use this first verse. God grant me the serenity to accept the thing. Do you want to say it together? God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's amazing, isn't it? So true. So calmness comes with acceptance. I have a friend that has had really bad back pain for a couple of years since an injury, and she's been waiting to have surgery, and she's been hoping, and she couldn't get an appointment until May, but then they slid her in, and she was so excited. She finally got her appointment, and then the doc says, sorry, you're not a candidate for surgery. You're just going to have to manage your pain. Oh, she's so deflated for a moment. But the other thing about this friend is that at the beginning of the year, she rededicated herself to meditation practice. And I know she does it every day because I'm her accountability partner. And so I get her texts that say, you know, I meditated again and again and again. And so grounded in that kind of wisdom, she was able to make a shift. And she said, I just accepted it. And she said, 2/3 of my pain is gone. This is how it works. So much happens in our minds, and so much shift and transformation can happen in our minds. And then we just carry on, right? Changing the things we can, contributing where we can. Maybe we have to summon some courage in some situations, like the Serenity Prayer indicates, to speak our truth. Or maybe we need to summon our courage to reach out to somebody, to lift somebody up, to give of our time and our talent and our treasure in some way, or to expand that in some way. Or maybe it's just simple stuff, you know? Smiling to shift our own disposition and maybe bring something sweet to someone else, or standing up a little straighter, or stretching to shift our own disposition or the way that we move about the world. There's so many different small things that we can do that make change, that allow us to grow into this idea of who we truly want to be and how we truly want to show up in the world, I think. The 13th century mystic Meister Eckhart summed all of this up really well by just saying, let God be God in us. Just let God be God in us. I mean, it's already there. It's accessible and available. We know this now. Just let it be. Let it be in charge. And then watch what happens. Because when we let God be God in us, those egoic impulses recede. And then the ego can be in service in the ways that we direct it according to the guidance we receive. It's just like the transformation that happened in chaos. He became calmer and a happier dog. We became a calmer and happier household. And everybody was safe who came to the door. You know, and so it's like for us, whatever we meet in the doorway, so to speak, whatever we meet along the way on the path in our lives, we can meet it with greater calmness. And calmness doesn't mean we don't care. Calmness doesn't mean we don't have passion. It's none of that. It's about being centered. It's about being able to say, oh, okay, this is what's happening now. How will I meet it? What are we going to do now? What am I going to be now? How am I going to respond to that? Or maybe I'll just go out in nature and sit for a while and ask the trees. Whatever it is, we can trust it, because in that surrendered state of mind, we'll be shown the way. So I want to invite you to turn to somebody you didn't already turn to and say, keep calm and carry on. Keep calm and carry on. I'm feeling a new Unity t-shirt in the making. Well, let's close out with this affirmation together, and just noticing the joy in the room that feels really good. Let's bring that in too. Together, I keep calm and carry on, letting my spirit take the lead. So it is.